Hello and welcome to another edition of the TeachNet podcast. I'm Clifford Brown, and with me in the studio today, I have Brian Daly from Adamstown Community College. I have Sam Lyons from CloudyScope, and on the phone, I have Simon Lewis from Carlow Educate Together. And we're going to be talking today about cloud computing. I'm sure you've all heard this phrase, and many of you will be wondering, well, what exactly does it mean, and how can we use it for education? So, Sam, I'm going to ask you, first of all, can you tell our listeners, just what is cloud computing?
It's a word that's kind of just been brought around recently in the last few years to kind of identify how services can be hosted, I suppose, in the internet. It came from actually back in the day when people used to draw a picture of the internet as a cloud as it went up into the internet and then came back down. So it's quite a broad topic to cover, but roughly what it is talking about is services which are hosted externally. So if I say to you that normally I'd have my software on my computer, which is on my hard drive, well, now we can have our software hosted externally in the cloud, which means that's going to be held like on, say, Amazon would be a perfect example of a cloud hosting service provider. So I suppose externally hosted services in the internet.
And do you think, Sam, that ultimately this is the way computing is going to go for everybody?
That's a very big debate at the moment, actually, because there's a lot of worries and stresses and issues that are being brought up around this. I think that it probably is the best way to go. I think that personally, I think it is probably the best way to go. Once those issues are dealt with, I suppose, over time, it's going to take a few years before to actually become widespread, I think, and for everybody to jump on board.
Mm-hmm. Simon, could I ask you, could you tell us what sorts of services are available in cloud computing?
In my school, we're using services that Google offer, Google Apps, which would be some type of cloud computing, and we're using that as a kind of communication tool for our staff. And that's generally what we're using cloud computing for. So we have we share all our documents. We have a staff notice board, things like that within our staff. I've also used recently a whiteboard, sharing whiteboards with people, in that you have a virtual whiteboard on the internet, and basically you can put up what you want on it and share it with anyone else, and everything's stored somewhere in the world where we can't reach.
And I presume you mean by that now the whiteboard, it's not to be confused now, like interactive whiteboards with which you are associated. This is more like a notice board that exists on a server hosted externally somewhere.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
I see. And Brian, in Adamstown Community College, are you making any use of cloud computing?
We are at present. We're a new school, so we've just started experimenting with this. Our students, we're giving them their various login abilities, the same as Simon there. We're using Google Apps for education. We're using it for two main purposes. One, staff communication. It's a very useful tool for that. And secondly, it's an excellent resource for teachers if we want to share resources with students. So whatever we use in the classroom, what we show on a PowerPoint presentation, video, whatever it is, we can upload it onto Google Apps. The student goes home and there it is. And they can view the class all over again. We can place their homework on it. Whatever resources we need to share are there for the students. They can look at them at home. And at the same time, they can work collaboratively with another student who may be in a different location in their own house, for example, different houses. And they can all work together on whatever piece of project work or homework we set them.
Yes, I had some experience with that collaborative work myself recently on a document that I had to have six people making an input onto. And rather than me emailing it around with all the various versions, it was much easier to have it in the cloud where everybody had authoring rights and could come in and change it. Sam, turning again to you and talking more about what sorts of applications are there, even within Google Apps, if we're going to talk about Google Apps, what sort of applications are there for schools?
Well, I suppose if I'd opened, but what is cloud computing is to give an example is something like Gmail, which is just one of the webmail accounts which exists for, like, most people probably have a webmail account today and they don't realize that they're actually using the cloud already. So most people have already bought into the cloud without their realization of it. So Gmail will be a perfect example of one of the services. So it's a mail service that you'd get as part of the, anybody can get a Gmail account, but as part of the Google Apps for Education, it's another service. The advantage behind that within the Google Apps feature is that it actually allows you to have a customized, or not customized, but your own domain name. So for my school, what's your domain there, Brian?
Adamstown College CC. So we just use that.
So they have their own, like, domain name as their, so everybody has their own email address at the school name. So that'd be one of the big advantages. And then you can brand it as well with your own look as well. So that'd be one of the advantages behind that. So you've got that. You've got the calendar feature, which works in a very collaborative environment. Online calendars are very useful. You can get text messages reminded sent to you for free. They have those Google Sites. They've also recently brought in Google Groups, which allows you to have discussion boards. And you've got all these different features. In, say, that's only one example of a cloud service would be the Google Apps one. But why the advantage behind that is, one, that it's all branded with your own identity. Secondly, it really has quite a simple administration to it. Once somebody's trained in it, I think one person could administer the back end to it. It's quite easy to administer. And then I suppose the big advantage behind this, they've also got Google Video now as well. Video. And then there's kind of an intranet tool as well called Google Sites. Well, you'd have other things as well. Ones that I would use would be things like Prezi, which is a presentation software, which I think is excellent. A different way of doing presentations, actually. Another one, the excellent one, I think, is VoiceThread. I don't know if you've ever come across that.
Yes, indeed.
VoiceThread, another fantastic online collaborative tool, which can be used for history or geography or to any subject, really. So there's a realm of them out there, a plethora of different web applications, which are all these cloud tools. From my point of view, as a passionate educator and somebody who follows technology a lot, it's how do you use these ones for education is the thing, you know, and how can they be of benefit in education? Because there's so many of them. How do you assign which ones are of use and which ones aren't of use, I suppose?
Simon, I'll just come back to you now and ask you, in relation to Google Apps and what you're doing with it, what does a school need in terms of equipment to be able to access the cloud? Is there any particular software needed, or is there anything, or is that all hosted externally?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of it is that it doesn't need any software bar an internet browser. All you really need is a computer that has an internet connection, and preferably a broadband one, I suppose, just because as it's all hosted online, if you have a very slow connection, it might be a little bit frustrating to use. So, I mean, that's pretty much all you'd need to actually get up and running. Sam was saying, I mean, very, very small technical knowledge just to get things going might be needed. But once that's out of the way, anyone can use it. It's very intuitive.
And then can you access all your work from wherever you are? It doesn't matter where you are. Like, even if you were to be on holiday somewhere and you felt the need to do some work, would this be possible?
If I was on my summer holidays and I had to check in, yes, I could do that. I mean, right now I have I'm on the phone to you now, and I have my Google Apps right in front of me, and I know that across the way in another room there's a teacher online right now. I mean, it doesn't really matter where you are as long as the computer has an internet connection.
I see. Brian, I understand you're going to do something for TeachNet around this whole area.
Yeah, I'm hoping to set up a sort of a blog in terms of sharing with other teachers these ideas. This isn't a perfect solution for teachers. And it's really, we need to talk, we need to discuss, we need to see what are the issues that come out of using something like Google Apps, this cloud computing computing experience. And I'd like to get feedback from other teachers, other educators, to see how we can sort of move forward with it. There are limitations to it, so we have to think about them. I think in the past, one of the biggest problems with a lot of technology when it moves into schools is just kind of, it's good, and therefore you can use it. It takes time. Teachers need to think about it. It needs to spread gradually. And I think something like a blog where you can get feedback, dialogue going between teachers and educators is necessary for something like this to really take off.
Mm-hmm. Sam, are there any security issues about like putting your data into this cloud? Like, I know I use the cloud with online backup. You know, I back up my computer. I have a certain amount of space bought on an external server, and my backups go to that. What are the disadvantages to it? Are there any? Like, what are the security issues or the implications there? Is it all secure?
Again, this is probably one of the bigger issues that has come up with cloud-based and why there's a big fear. There was an issue with, I can't remember who it was, where there was a lot of services went missing. I think it was a new phone had come out and they had all of the information held in the cloud, and there wasn't a backup held actually in this particular instance, and they lost all of that. So it does happen. But like, I think this is where, you know, I'd say, it's such a new field for companies, is that the realization of how do you do this the most secure way, and that's where people will always question that risk, you know, of your information losing your information. Now, larger companies, something like Google Apps, they have like multiple backups. The chance of you losing your stuff is fairly low, I'd imagine, really, to be honest. But the big advantage is that a lot of these companies are beginning to realize is that, you know, and there was an interesting thing that Simon mentioned, is that you need to have your internet connection. And that's one of the things that people go, well, what happens if my internet connection goes down? We all know that connections go down, or you mightn't have a connection with you at one point in time. So there is an additional feature. Well, I know Google Apps have taken this on board, and companies are beginning to realize that there needs to be offline access as well. So they've actually even taken that on board. So you can actually keep a copy of your information held externally, not just in the cloud, but on your own system as well, which is a big thing. So that's usually a thing called Google Gears. So that's probably what's needed, is you do need to have synchronization. So the way it works is that the information, it takes a synchronization of what's in the cloud onto your local system, which you can then put onto a hard drive if you want. And then you can work offline if there's no connection. And then when the internet connection comes back, it'll synchronize it. So I think you probably do need as well, maybe in the beginning years as well, is you do need to have an ability to keep offline access as well as online access. And then just over time, it'll become so secure that it'll be fine. As whether the information's secure, that's a different question. Mm-hmm. And one that I'm not even going to go into, because I can't even answer that question, to be honest. And the one thing that Google have always been questioned about is the fact that things like, you know, they sell advertisement, and they access your data for advertisement. Now, they don't go in and access your data. They have a kind of a string that goes in and checks words in your thing, and you end up getting advertisement, which is dedicated to what is in your email, but they're not actually going in and reading your email and sending it out to people. But that's another area altogether which I'm not going to touch.
Okay. And Brian, in your school now, where you've been using Google Apps specifically, how do teachers get an account with this, or how does a school get set up? And is there any cost involved?
No cost. Google provided for free, and they say it will be free in the future. If you're a private organization, they do charge for this. So an educational institution gets it free. It's up to really an individual to do it. So I've taken it on in my own school to do it. And it's relatively straightforward. I'm no genius when it comes to computers, but for somebody like me, an enthusiastic amateur, it's relatively easy and straightforward to set up. There's a bit of work in it. And once you've done that, it's hosted by Google. And the way they say, the way they sell it to you is, if you trust Google as your search engine every day, what's the problem with this? And that's really the good thing about it. It's there and it's reliable. It doesn't have advertisements in it. The one for Google Apps for Education doesn't have advertisements in it. So it's great in that regard. And really, it seems like it has tremendous possibilities for the educational sector. I think it offers a wealth of sort of opportunities for it.
So to investigate it further, teachers would need to go to, would they need to put in, you know, just look for Google Apps? And
yeah, just go Google Apps for Education, and they have videos. They have everything you need to organize it. I did it myself. We're a new school, so there was nobody else doing it before me, and it was relatively straightforward to do it. Bit of work, but nothing difficult.
Simon, coming back to you, are you aware of any other groups who are offering similar services to education? Like, are Microsoft doing anything in this field?
In cloud computing?
Yes.
I believe they are, yeah. I to be honest, I don't know too much about it. I think Live is...
Windows Live.
Windows Live seems to be Microsoft's offering. And I'm pretty sure that once Google and Microsoft come on board, Apple probably do their Mobile Me service as well. So there's a few I know off the top of my head, but I'm not an expert in this area at all. I like Brian, I'm an enthusiastic amateur at cloud computing and Google Apps, and you know, I've just kind of made it my own and hope that it's working, and so far it is.
As I recall, at the SESI annual conference this year in Portlaoise, there was a group there demonstrating Windows Live, Sonasi. Isn't that the group who were there? Sonasi?
Yes.
And they are offering that service, or a Windows Live service, to schools. I think their offering was that they would give it free to the first 100 schools, if I'm correct.
Okay. Yeah. I know another company doing Google Apps, is a company called Damson, who I've come across. Though, again, I don't know too much about that service. I've just heard of them.
Sam, just going back to you then, maybe to finish off with you, where do you see all this ending up, cloud computing? Do you see the time coming when we'll just buy a machine that'll just have a browser on it, and our software and our files and everything will just be stored externally by some hosting services?
Yeah, with time, Cliff, as I say, I think that, you know, this is something, change is something which people find hard. I know even in education as well, it can be quite a hard thing to, you know, to see when you've got your own things to be doing in school, and then you've got to take on all this new stuff. So it's going to take time. So I think there's a requirement of patience by two different things. One, the teachers have to be patient, and then the principal of the schools need to realise, you know, what's needed for a school to take this on board. So what you need to do, I suppose, you need to give it a bit of time. Within time, I think, yes, everything will end up being in the cloud. Because it's a bit like people saying, you know, like, I always used to have this argument of like old tapes and stuff, and people like, tapes were better, or film was better in cameras, you know, and then suddenly digital comes along and they keep getting it better and better and better. And when so well improved and they've found all the faults, then people will finally jump on board. So it's just going to take time, but not now, just it's going to be a progressive thing over time. So.
And Brian, you were encouraging other teachers to maybe contribute some ideas in your work. How would people be able to do that?
Well, hopefully when I get the blog up and running, it'll be hosted on the TeachNet website, and we'll get a dialogue going in that way.
Very good. Well, I think I look forward to that dialogue, and I'm sure there'll be many of you out there who would have some ideas around this that they could contribute. So I'd like to just thank Simon, Brian and Sam, and we'll hopefully you'll join us again for another edition of the TeachNet podcast.